How female erasure misshapes our history. Someone I know discovered that her family tree does not record members of the female sex. Not daughters, nor daughters-in-law, no women. The last link shows her father's name followed by an empty box with asterisks because he has no sons. The legend at the base indicates single asterisk, unmarried. Double asterisk, married but no children. Triple asterisk, only daughters. This is female erasure at its starkest. We are not only a country that aborts fetuses at birth for being female. If they are born, we won't acknowledge their existence in a record of births. Record keeping is so important. It forms the foundation of all narratives that build history. The system has nullified the entire existence of half of humanity by omitting to record the females on the family tree. This isn't just a missing name. This is female erasure, erasing the very existence of countless women. I've never seen my own family tree. My ancestors were not particularly rich or remarkable or prominent in a caste-organized society. There have been verbal stories of specific individuals. A smuggler generations ago, a top cop, funnily enough, his son-in-law. A fireman here, a polygamist there, a relative rumored to work for a top secret government department. A collector, a politician, an engineer who built the first hovercraft while still in college. All men. I assumed without much thought that no remarkable women existed in my family. And I know I'll be forgotten too, a thought that never bothered me before. I've never set much store by the idea of leaving a legacy or having my name known generations after I pass. But I wonder now if some amount of that male ego is necessary. Erasing women from memory. Female erasure isn't new. It's woven into history where women's achievements were often minimized or forgotten. Possibly the first known instance of science fiction in English literature was authored by a woman. It was originally published anonymously, and why does that surprise us? As recently as the 1990s, a woman abbreviated her first name to be just an initial to be able to publish a story about a wizarding school. Mary Shelley's initial anonymity shows the deep-rooted female erasure in literature and culture. It's possible that the book only even got published because Mary was white, privileged, and the daughter of an illustrious philosopher. It would have been easier to erase Mary Shelley since she became an unwed mother from a relationship with an already married man. And yet, history is full of authors, artists, musicians, politicians, and even religious leaders who are flag bearers of nepotism and have done much worse. Like rape, murder, slavery, war, genocide, looting, exploitation. Their fandoms remain as robust as ever. Their fans demanding that you separate the art from the artist. That idea is never extended to women. We are barely perceived as human and individual, much less allowed to have things in our life beyond the personal. One of the early reviews of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein outs her gender and blames that for the novel's flaws. In two other reviews where the author is known as the daughter of William Goodwin, the criticism of the novel makes reference to the feminine nature of Mary Shelley. The British critic attacks the novel's flaws as the fault of the author. The writer of it is, as we understand, a female. This is an aggravation of that, which is the prevailing fault of the novel. But if our authoress can forget the gentleness of her sex, it is no reason why we should, and we shall therefore dismiss the novel without further comment. Isn't it interesting that Frankenstein, while being a classic for an audience that's mostly male, often toxically so science bros, explores the complexity of creating something that turns against you? Only a woman could have written that. The women of my history that I almost didn't know. My assumption about there being no remarkable women I was related to is not unique. Many of us unknowingly overlook the women in our lineage because they're simply not recorded. This year, I became close to an elderly aunt. I never saw her at the rare functions I attended as a child. Living in Mumbai, we were cut off from the usual social glue of rituals and festivals that bind Indian communities. As it was, I only connected with her because of the specific efforts of a few men across generations. My grandfather was very close to her husband, despite being of a different generation and related only by marriage. He would travel to their town often. Her husband was very fond of my father, a younger cousin separated by distance, and would call often. My dad is very fond of her son, and her son, a second cousin in my sea of aunts, uncles, cousins of my generation, is the big brother I've never had. He pranks me while I yell at him. He's also there when I or my parents are unwell, without question, without even needing to be asked. And he made it possible for me to build a relationship with my aunt. In Indian families, the default trajectory of relationships goes along the lines of duty. And these are always defined by the male members. Familial relationships are fulfilled, not nurtured, as obligations, as charted in records such as the family tree. If even one of these men had not bucked that trend, my aunt and I would never have met. If not for luck and these men's actions, female erasure would have kept me from knowing my aunt's story and my own history. I don't remember seeing her at any of the engagements, weddings, Valahap, which is baby shower, or Arangetrams, which is the first public Bharatanatyam performance. It only occurs to me now that she may not have been included in these because after her husband passed away, she ceased to exist in people's minds. When all women are seen as only their function to men, why would history care about the one ceasing to be so? My aunt was widowed when she was very young, leaving her two sons under the age of 10. I vaguely knew that she was a working woman, and I assumed that that took care of everything. How conveniently we write off the entire life stories of women. If she had been a man who lost a wife young and had two children to take care of, everyone would have rallied around to ensure that the roles of spouse, caregiver, and co-parent were filled as soon as possible. The societal expectation to focus on male achievement perpetuates female erasure and reinforces patriarchal narratives. My great-grandmother was also widowed young, and she had three little boys to care for. It would have been unheard of for her to work. Her brother supported her financially as long as he was able to. And her oldest son, my grandfather, joined the army instead of studying to be a doctor so he could contribute to the family income. I never met her because she passed away when my mother was very young. What do I know about her? That she was a gentle mother-in-law by unanimous agreement of all three of her daughters-in-law, in direct contrast to the Indian pattern of bully mothers-in-law. She traveled with my grandparents to New Delhi in the 1950s to help them set up home, despite having no knowledge of the language, the culture, and never having had any exposure outside the house. She had very little education, but she wrote spiritual poetry, discovered in ragged pages after her death. Was she the original writer in my family, and I just one of her descendants with her bequeathed gift of writing? It shouldn't take luck or happenstance to know women's stories. Should our lives not be documented as naturally and thoroughly as the men's? Reflecting on my family history, I realize how much female erasure has robbed me of a richer narrative, of a larger tapestry of familial life to relate to and to take pride in belonging. Strong women are also like this. I discovered that my aunt has an MA in history in addition to the BA degree that let her have the profession and her independence. That she achieved these well after she got married. Her husband supported her studying, another remarkable thing for 1970s small town Tamil Nadu. I wonder how much of that also contributed to people forgetting about her existence after my uncle passed. Tamilian society is just as patriarchal as the other parts of India. It isn't necessarily very visible or obvious, but it shows in the way we just erase women from our minds. If she can take care of herself, we are not required to think about her, is the attitude. Popular media doesn't help. It perpetuates female erasure by only showing narrow images of strong women. On this trip, we were taken to see a rare monument of significant historical value. It is closed to the general public. You can only enter after applying for numerous permissions, and even then, those permissions are usually only granted to archaeologists and postgraduate students of history and such. How did we come to be on this tour? Because the guide had been a student of my aunt. He was proud to show his work to his teacher and her family. It was such an honor, and all because we were related to her. My aunt doesn't present as the image of strong woman that popular media likes to convey. She's mild-mannered and she doesn't speak much. And then suddenly in her dulcet tones, she'll drop a humorous observation or tap me gently on the arm to point out something wildly funny or equally wise. I'm so proud to be related to her, so happy to have been able to become close to her. Strength doesn't have to be loud. Women often show it through quiet endurance and small acts of kindness that sustain families and communities. I saw my aunt stumble when she stepped off a boat and almost fall into the water. And then I watched her right herself with complete dignity and continue the arduous walk up to Kanyakumari temple without batting an eyelid, her good humor unfazed. As we turned a corner, she said to me, "I thought I must be the oldest person on this boat. Ramya, look at that." And she pointed to a figure trundling past, bent over with age, using a walking stick and determinedly plodding up the path was another lady clad in a plain white sari. That lady must have been in her 90s. Her sari drape suggested that she was from North India and a widow. And she was in the southernmost tip of the country, making her way to see the magnificent view. Aren't Desi women just wonderful? Once famous, now reclaimed women. The advent of streaming services has created a space, however token, for stories of women, of older women, of divorced women, of single women, of single moms. And finally, we get to see people that we only ever knew as young girls, pretty, flighty objects for the plot progress of male stars. Remember Teena Munim of the sulky-faced Bombay train romance of Bato Bato Mein? I happened to be in the same room as her a few years ago. It was a conference room. The occasion was a business meeting, a pitch to Kokilaben Hospital's marketing team, and I was part of the team doing the pitching. We walked through the familiar hospital and entered the conference room. As my eyes passed around the table, I registered very late that one of the unobtrusive faces belonged to a former Bollywood star. Of course, I knew that she runs the hospital. I was really surprised to see her there. Why? Top management don't usually attend pitch meetings like these, deeming it to be beneath their status. It was easy to assume that a Bollywood actress was only the pretty face of a venture rather than a fully contributing member of the organization. How wrong I was. Teena Ambani was easily the most memorable senior client that I've ever presented to. She did not undercut or interrupt her team. She was just one of the many people listening. She asked questions, useful ones, and she listened for answers from every person speaking. Everything felt respectful as well as practical. Even in a city that is usually good about not letting egos get in the way of pragmatism, we leave that to Delhi, this meeting was a really positive experience for me, even if we didn't get the project. Seeing her as a capable leader was eye-opening. Another instance where female erasure had kept me from understanding her full story. It was a similar revelation when Zeena Taman started an Instagram account. Read her caption. She is a remarkable storyteller. Reclaiming these stories is essential. Without it, future generations will lose the chance to be inspired by the real complex lives of women. It makes a difference to the next generations of women to know that they are not the first to raise a voice to a system that doesn't see them. I came across an old interview of Amrita Singh. The one that many of us from the 90s remember is on the Simi Garewal show, a newly married giggly Amrita with her much younger husband Saif Ali Khan. At the time, I thought he looked regal, every inch the Indian royal. While she was charming, bubbly, likable, Amrita Singh was never going to look classy in the same way. It was a sweet picture of true love. And really, that was the OG gender swap May-December fairy tale. Never mind Priyanka and Nick Jiju. This is a different interview with an older Amrita Singh after her divorce. The interviewer is Pooja Bedi, who I had hoped would take a more progressive tack given her own wild child days in the 90s. Instead, I was appalled at her needling of the guest's choice to quit working after marriage and then return to work after her divorce. But Amrita, what a picture of dignity. She sounded calm and at peace with all that she was talking through. She didn't get pulled into a trap of being defensive or dramatic. Her matter-of-fact responses had all the charm of her semi-interview bubbliness. And now there's something even better than class. There is grace. Even in recognizing influential figures, we must confront female erasure that often overshadows their contributions. Why we need to record women's lives better? My aunt could probably explain why history is incomplete and flawed without the records of half of its population. Women's stories are more remarkable too, not the least because they're so far and few. Women go through many more challenges to achieve the same thing that men do. That makes women's journeys far more inspiring. For the same reason, women make for better leaders. My gender has had to worry about so many other people for so long while also fighting to exist that the skills of big vision, resource management, and sustainability come naturally now. Leaving women out of family records doesn't just erase individual lives. It distorts entire family histories and skews our understanding of society. Earlier this year, my mother was part of a religious function held at a temple. My father and I sat by watching the rituals and listening to the singing. When the program was over, the group made their way to a tiny lift. It had been raining heavily and the staircases were slippery. In addition, they were all senior citizens with the entire gamut of joint, bone and back related issues. My father the only man. One of the ladies insisted that my father take the lift while my mother joined her in walking down the stairs. Uncomfortably, my father explained that it was my mother who had joint trouble and he didn't. I assumed the lady's idea had to do with my father being the older one. But as he told me later, I think they're all used to having to take care of the men and with women just figuring out how to deal with situations. Take a look around anywhere in the world at people over the age of 50. Midlife crisis, retirement woes, all of these are assumed to happen to men only. Every culture has younger men being disproportionately pampered and older men being pandered to, fussed over and served. While the women of every age are part of the ones doing the serving, doing the living. Why then are we not included in the history of life?